Mario Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.
Welcome back to Mario's Sunday Roast. Now, my special guest today is an extraordinary woman altogether, a singer, songwriter, a winner of 3 Brit Awards, an MBE, an actor, and even a political activist. Ooh. But for many, she will always be connected with this song.
I promised myself I won't do that again. It's got to be.
And her new album, her 12th album, Cavalier, is out now, and she's going to be touring Ireland, and I'll tell you all about that later. But Eddie Reader, absolute pleasure to welcome you to Mario's Sunday Roast.
I'm such a fan. Aww. I really am. I'm like, goodness, I go into YouTube and I find Mario Rosenstock. I want to see more. You don't do enough on there. I've seen everything now.
I couldn't believe it when I heard that you'd seen my stuff. But anyway, listen, the first thing I want to say is you sent a tweet out yesterday and it said, heading to Ireland tomorrow, hoping to retrace the journey from the docks to Madame Markovitz's house that my suffragette great auntie and her pal Margaret Skinner took with yards of fuse wire under their skirts and explosives in their hats in 1950. No. Explain.
They were wild, these people. I found this archive because my dad's cousin died. He lived in Dublin with Molly and they both had no kids, so they died. He was 87 and I got a phone call. Do you want all this stuff? It's his father's stuff, who's my grandfather's brother. I went, oh, well, nobody else wanted it. So I thought I'll get maybe some pictures and find something about my family history. And I brought back all these Centra bags full of sheets of paper and they were all handwritten, and I took out a couple of them. In fact, Shay Healy came with me in the day. I said, come with me, because there's all this stuff. There's swords with FF on them. I don't know what they are.
Like, Fianna Fáil.
Yeah, I don't know. And there was the writing was like, there's somebody, he's going to visit somebody called Miari Kayavichi, and he's going to meet, James Connolly. And what's going on? Who is this man that I didn't know? And so I found out all this stuff.
Yeah,
and
because you have a great background here in Ireland. I mean, your great granduncle.
It's my granduncle. So he's my grandfather was his younger brother. So my grandfather was 9. When this uncle was arrested in Glasgow and put in Edinburgh Castle for delivering as a Fianna Scout, a Glasgow Fianna Scout, some explosives to Belfast and Dublin, to the Connolly House in Belfast and to find Markovitz down in Rathmines,
right,
and deliver these things. And so there was a whole group of them. There was him, his future wife, my great auntie, who was mates with Margaret Skinner, and they were in the Cum and Amann in Glasgow.
Cum and Amann, yeah.
So the Glasgow, there was all these different clubs for the what I found out about it, which is fantastic, is this man's written his story down through the 50s, the 40s and the 50s, and he's written very clearly when he was born in 1898 and how he went through the Glasgow, the way everything was shifting with the workers' revolution, and you had the lockout here in Dublin, and the scouts were only available kind of if you had a bit of money, but the Fianna was kind of free-ish if you did ceilidhs and stuff and you learned a bit about folk music and Gaelic culture, you could earn a bit of money and you could go on camps to Dublin, the international camps. So they were all saving for the international camps when he was about 13, and he was a captain and he joined the Fianna rather than the Baden-Powell God Save the King camp, because the Scots weren't that bothered with the God Save the King thing. And not only that, they had wooden sticks for rifles, and the Irish boys got to play with real swords.
Right.
And this was massive.
So this was Seamus Reader.
His name's Seamus Reader.
And he was in the IRB.
He called himself Seamus. His name's James Reader.
Yeah.
He's an Episcopalian born and not Irish at all, but joined the Fianna with his little brother Alex. And my grandfather came later, but he joined the Baden-Powell Scouts, then he joined the Fianna Scouts in Glasgow. Then with the Fianna Scouts, he joined the Irish Volunteers, which, so he wasn't really allowed in the IRB, he wasn't old enough. And his missus, Agnes and Una and Devlin. They're all 17, 18, 19, and they're all falling in love with one another. Seamus Robertson and Joseph Robertson, and they have these groups in Glasgow, and they go raiding in all the mines and in the outskirts of Glasgow, and they have these great adventures, and he's written them all down, and I'm in love with them.
And you're here in Ireland, and it's 100 years ago, of course, since Constance Markievicz was elected as an MP.
Yeah.
So it all kind of comes full circle.
It's pretty enticing for me because I love history anyway, but finding these real human beings, and I did walk down to Rathmines and I found the window that he crawled through to try and get in, and he writes that he met Sean McDermott and Patrick Pearce and all that, and they were all having a jam sandwich.
Yeah.
And so you've got this idea of this boy from Glasgow. He goes to the North Wall, and she comes as well, Agnes, and he talks about how they pretend they're getting married at Glasgow Central. So they're all throwing confetti over each other to fool the guards, because all the Dublin guards are hanging out in Glasgow thinking they could catch these buggers that are bringing the explosive over for the stockpiling.
And here you are back in Ireland, and you've had an extraordinary career. I mean, I played Perfect there, but that was only it's only been a tiny part of your career. You've been singing all over the world, and you particularly love coming back to Ireland. Yeah,
I do. I have a Irish granny from Tralee, and I have and she was my favourite person in the whole world.
Yeah, how does she talk again?
My granny from Ireland, come here, I want you. Do you want an egg? Are you vegetarian? Do you want an egg? And I, granny, it's not an egg.
That's a brilliant Kerry voice now for a Glaswegian girl.
Well, I went to the Shimasa Centre in Tralee, and I'm going back there in February, and two busloads of Namuks, her name was Namuk, two busloads turned up, and they were all sitting at the front, and I was like saying, my granny comes from here, at Lower Abbey Street, and they all started shouting out at me, just, what's her name? Who was she? Where was her father's name? Who was her mother? And this is from the stage, and I'm going, well, her name was Madge, and, you know, she passed away in 88, just as I got that number one, and, yeah.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you here, Eddie, and we ask all our guests to pick a kind of a comedy clip, maybe a movie clip, and maybe their hero clip, and your comedy clip is, of course, almost predictable, because it is...
It's my Billy Connolly.
It's Billy Connolly.
I do love him.
And he's not well at the moment, isn't he?
He's all right. But I'm just going to ignore it like he does. I'm just going to decide that he's well. He's going through a phase of something. His body's decided not to work in certain ways. I think it's called Parkinson's disease. He's really funny. He says, I've got Parkinson's disease. I wish he'd bloody kept it to himself. So, he's got this thing.
And the joke that you picked is pretty much the original joke that launched him.
Yeah.
Really, was it?
Yeah, the bike joke on Parkinson. He came on Parkinson and nobody spoke in Scottish accents on my telly ever in the 70s. And this guy turns up and he looks like a rock star, and he had a big sporran and on his leather, pale leather suit, and he was a real hippie, and we were all, it was like late 70s, and this guy comes on the telly and he tells this joke about, and he uses accents and voices that are just like we all knew, and that was amazing. Apparently he came back from doing Parkinson after telling that joke and being renowned then to people standing in the airport in Glasgow just applauding him. They were so proud of him. We are so proud of him. He's genius.
I hope I can get away with this. It's a beauty. And he said, "Are you big in?" You know, in Scotland, they call me big in. And I'm not very big, but everybody there's off a wee, you know. But he said, "Did you hear about the one, the guy had done his wife in and that?" And I said, "No." He said, "This guy was going out to meet his friend in the pub, and he went down. He said, oh, hello, how's it going?" He said, "Fine, fine." He said, "How's the wife?" He said, "Oh, she's dead." I said, "What?" He says, "Dead, dead again. Dead, I murdered her. Forget it." She kidding me on. He said, no, it's morning. Dave, he said, "Look, I'm not talking to you if you keep on talking like that." He said, "Well, please yourself. I'll show you if you want." He said, "Ah, show me." So are we up to his tenement building through the close? That's the entrance to the tenement. Into the back green, into the wash house, and sure enough, there's a big mound of earth. There's a bum sticking out of it. He says, "Is that her?" He says, "Aye." He says, "What'd you leave a bum sticking out for?" He says, "I need somewhere to park my bike."
It's just ridiculous.
And at the time, that was regarded as
Very edgy altogether.
Oh my God. Well, I think he started stand-up comedy. You know, the way we know it now. Because then, before that, it was kind of jokes, isn't it?
It was jokes. And then he turned them into autobiographical stories and apocryphal stories and made-up stories.
Yeah. What do you call them here? You call them Shanachies?
Well, Shanachies are kind of, from Kerry, like the old storytellers.
Right, yeah.
So they sit around the fire and they tell you sort of long stories. Right. Yeah, the Shanachies.
But the way he talked, and when I hear him now, my dad's gone now and a lot of his brothers have gone and I just see them all just through that man because the comedy of them, and I think comedy's a wonderful thing for bringing people together. And what I loved about him is when he talks, I'm just listening to him there, and he says to me, those wee little things that you put in, and they're magical and musical. You know all about that with the impersonations that you do.
Yeah.
You have to pick up on all the wee tiny.
It's the small things that people pick up on. Yeah, that's the things. It's not the big ones. It's always the small ones. Yeah. Exactly. And have you met him?
Yeah, a couple of times. In fact, he impersonated me once. I was telling you earlier, before we were talking here on the mic, that when I went to London, I because I'm a singer, I think I pick up accents. So my Glaswegian sort of became a little bit more proper or posh or something, just blanded out a bit, and I became a little bit, you know, dotting my I's, pronouncing my T's, and I met him in the airport and he came up to me and I was going, oh, Billy Connolly, you're great, and he suddenly started to speak like that at me, back at me, you know, like I thought, why is he doing that? Well, it's because that's the way I'm sounding now. For some reason, I've picked up a lot of English noises.
Great, Eddie. Well, listen, we're going to take a little quick commercial break. Join me after the break, where I'm going to be talking to Eddie about her hero and about her movie clip. Join us after the break.
Mario's Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.
Welcome back to Mario's Sunday Roast. I'm here with singer-songwriter, the famous Glaswegian Eddie Reader. And Eddie, you were saying that, well, actually, you were on the Billy Connolly documentary, weren't you?
Yeah, they asked me to do that. I'm so proud of being asked to do that because he is actually, I feel like he's part of the sandstone of Glasgow. And my uncle Donnie was usher at his wedding. And apparently he babysat for my uncle Donnie and my cousin Kevin, who's now in his 40s. Like when he was a baby, apparently Connolly gave him a bit of Guinness. I don't know, but we were rough with our kids in Scotland, you know. Grannies would give you whiskey and stuff.
Frankie Boyle territory we're in now.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And listen to this. We have a little clip of this because you're obviously everybody, you know, associates you with Perfect and Fairground Attraction. Yeah. But I never knew you did it at Osgailga.
A what?
Osgailga. You did it in Irish.
Oh, what? Osgailga. Oh, yeah, I see. What are you saying? I did it phonetically. It was Orla Sweeney's fault. She was doing this charity album, and she was getting people to do their hits in the Irish. So she started teaching me, and I had her standing right next to me. I know you know what this is like, so you mimic. So she was doing Ich bi aglum gra a toish gepishka, and I'm like writing it down in the phonetic. And I managed it. I got through it. I don't know if I could do it again, but I got through it.
Well, here it is.
That's your Michael Flatley. I'm doing your Michael Flatley. I'm doing Mario Rosenstock doing Michael Flatley doing Perfect.
Forfa.
Did I say it wrong? What is it supposed to be?
Yeah, no, you did. Your pronunciation was great, actually.
Oh, see, I'm good. I know, I can do it a wee bit, the mimicking. I do it. That's why I'm a big appreciator of what you do. It takes
right, let's get to your...
good ears.
Let's get to your movie clip. Your movie clip is actually a bit weird because just before Christmas, I was telling the listeners of Mario Sunday Roast that my favourite Christmas film is It's a Wonderful Life. Mm. And but you've actually picked a clip from It's a Wonderful Life.
I do love this film too. There's brilliant things in it. Like there's, you know, the way they sing Auld Lang Syne at the end. You know?
I have it written down here.
Crazy. Yeah. But they, you know, the wonderful speech that he does to Harry Potter, and I do think it's relevant now. It's this idea that...
Mr. Potter.
Well, I think the greed sort of rises and then the rest of us with a bit of wisdom we have to shut it down a wee bit.
Yeah.
And that's what he does in the movie.
Just a minute now, hold on, Mr. Potter. Just a minute. Now, you're right when you say my father was no businessman. I know that. Why he ever started this cheap penny ante building alone, I'll never know. But neither you nor anybody else can say anything against his character, because his whole life was... Why, in the 25 years since he and Uncle Billy started this thing, he never once thought of himself. Isn't that right, Uncle Billy? He didn't save enough money to send Harry to school, let alone me. But he did help a few people get out of your slums, Mr. Potter. And what's wrong with that? Well, here, you're all businessmen here. Don't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers? You said that what'd you say just a minute ago? They had to wait and save their money before they even thought of a decent home? Wait? Wait for what? Until their children grow up and leave them? Until they're so old and broken down that do you know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book. I'm talking about the building and loan.
I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on, and it's galling you. That's what you're talking about, I know. Well, I've said too much. You're the board here. You do what you want with this thing. There's just one thing more, though. This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What an actor is that man. You can feel it, can't you, when he's saying those lines?
Oh, he had a sense of decency, all right, James Stewart. Oh. He projected a sense of decency. But I think it was very opposite that you chose that. I mean, you know, the country you're in at the moment has a particular problem with homelessness, but also not even homelessness, but people not even being able to afford homes at all. People on double incomes just not even being able to afford having a home.
We're rich. What the hell are we doing, you know? We go through the gauntlet of giving people money all the way down the street. You know, why don't we just tax us and fix it? You know, tax us. Instead, we don't, you know, there's all the people sitting with their blankets all the way down the shop, like in Byers Road where I live, all the way down. And they come from Manchester, from Liverpool. They all come and they're sitting there and they're freezing. And you're, you know, you give everybody a bit of money. You're just, you know, bloody tax us and let's sort it all out and give them at least the decency of a bit of, oh, hey, Jimmy Stewart said it good. Yeah,
Jimmy Stewart said it well. and what was I going to say? One of the highlights of your career to date has been, well, I suppose the fact that you sing in all different modes. But one of the real standout points was when you brought the poetry of Robert Burns and put it to music some years ago. For people out there in Ireland, who's Robert Burns?
Oh, he's a cheeky chappy that you never knew what he was going to say next. And a lot of people were amazed and frightened.
When did he live?
He lived in 1759. He was born until 1796. So he was only 36 or 37 when he'd passed. But in that time, he started writing at 15. But he started writing poetry, but he always could write poetry. But he started writing because the girl, they did this thing at August where him and the girl of the town, they do the harvesting together, and they usually couple up for future reference. They couple up a couple of the youngins. So he was 15 and she was 15, and he used to take the thorns out of her hand, and he talks about that. And then she brought in one day a poem that the laird's son had written for her because she was so beautiful. So that forced him. The next day he wrote this beautiful poem to her. And then he would go, as he grew up, he was on the cheeky side of the law, and he would protect the young guys that were getting into trouble, and he would write poems about the pretentious ones in the town and hang them up on the tree, and nobody knew who had written it, except they did know it was him, but they knew who it was about. One was about To a Louse, which was about a little louse crawling along this pretentious girl's hat that she'd brought into church that Sunday just to show off the bloody hat. She wasn't caring about the preacher going blah blah blah. She was interested in showing off her hat. But he spies a little louse, so he writes this song, poem about this poor louse, how it has to slum it in this lassie's fancy hat from France when he could be in some Jehe's jacket doing it because he Nancy's the pub, you know. So he's just a genius, and he was able to describe all of us as we were then, and then the romance of Scotland too is in his heart. But what I love most about him is that he's an unquiet ghost. Once you start getting involved in his writings, things like My Love Is Like a Red, Red Rose That's Newly Sprung in June, once you start delving into the attitude of the man that wrote those things, or wrote Should Old Acquaintance Be Forgotten, Never Brought to Mind, Here's a Hand, My Trusty Friend, In Guise a Hod of Thine, those kind of things that have lasted all these centuries, there's not one other writer I know that has done it so well, apart from people like Shakespeare, of course, but with a sense that he was one of us. Like, Shakespeare always seems a bit remote to me. We don't really know him, but with Burns, you know what he had for his breakfast, you know who he was sleeping with, you know how many wains he had, you know who all the people that are in his poetry are pictures of all of those people that would be long dead and forgotten if it wasn't for that poem that he's written about them. So he was a chronicler of people, and I love that about him.
And it's funny how it ties in with It's a Wonderful Life, because at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, they sing It's Auld Lang Syne.
Auld Lang Syne, nobody knows the words. It's great, yeah. With Auld Lang Syne. I know all the words now and all the versions. There's about three different tunes. But
now you're very romantic, Eddie.
I think you're
very romantic, and Burns was, of course, a great romantic poet as well. But you, for your hero, you have picked
me, old man,
your husband, John Douglas, who you work with as well.
Yeah, I do. He wrote me Wild Mountainside, and I've been through my whole life just sort of longing for home and somewhere where I felt safe and relaxed and comfortable. And of course, like many people, you know, my heart's been beating up along the way. And I finally met, well, I knew him for 20 years, and then we just sort of realised on Valentine's Day 2001 that we were actually quite compatible. And then he wrote me that song. And I was living in London, and as soon as I heard it, I just packed the boys and the car, and off we went back home, and I've been there now 17 years.
Tears within grasp, hear the Highlands call, the last mile is upon us, I'll carry you if you fall, I know the armor's heavy now, I know the heart inside, it's beautiful. Just over the wild mountain side, snow is falling all over.
Eddie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And can I just tell everybody out there that during February, you'll be playing in the Cork Everyman Theatre on Thursday the 14th, Wexford National Opera House, 15th, Kilkenny Watergate Theatre, 16th, 17th, Tralee, Galway Town Theatre, 19th, Dublin and Vicar Street, Letterkenny, Drogheda, Belfast Ulster Hall on Saturday the 24th. So you're going to be touring your beloved Ireland.
I do love yous. Yous are awfully nice to me, and I
great.
Really love it.
And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and telling us about your clips and your comedy clips and your hero, who happens to be your husband. Eddie Reader, continued great
he's
health.
He's first, but you were second.
Oh, thank you so much.
No, you're fantastic. Well, and I hope you work more over in Scotland. If you come to Glasgow, you can always have a room at my house.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Oh, I said that like Miriam O'Callaghan. Anyway, Eddie Reader, lovely to meet you.
Okay.
Mario's Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.